A global tour of lost spaces, invisible cities and forgotten islands. British geographer Alastair Bonnet went looking for these places and found them. The result is a book called Off the Map, 47 places that may or may not be found on Google Earth. Alastair Bonnet is Professor of Social Geography at Newcastle University in the UK. He's speaking with Greg Borschmann, and he began by explaining his interest in what's called psychogeography.
It's a great word, isn't it? Psychogeography. It really is the art of getting lost. It's geography for people who want to move beyond the ordinary map. I've been a professor of geography for 20 years or so, and I really began to feel that geography just wasn't getting the exciting content that I used to associate with it. There was something missing.
47 places off the map. How much are they defined by violence, by gangs, by rackets, by piracy, money laundering? For example, you explore Hobyo, a town on the western horn of Africa that's the piracy capital of the world.
Yes, Hobyo is what people call a feral city. In other words, a city that's lost the ability to maintain the rule of law, but is still a kind of functioning actor in the international system. Hobyo is a pirate town. It's where the millions of dollar ransoms are raised from hijacked vessels. And that money funnels through Hobyo and ends up in places like Dubai and Nairobi.
What about Hobyo itself, though? I mean, is it a place that you'd want to live?
Well, it's interesting. It is a funnel for a huge amount of money, tens of millions of dollars, but it's dirt poor. It's one of those places that just disappears from the map at night. It doesn't show up on any satellite imagery because there's no electricity generated there, which is usually a good indicator of poverty.
What about another no man's land, Colombia, the mountainous home of the revolutionary armed forces of Colombia, heavily armed militants who control 30% of the country, most of it jungle, but it hasn't resolved the civil war that's cost a quarter of a million lives, left a million homeless. Why were you so interested in Colombia and this place?
Yeah, there was something about the relationship of this revolutionary organization to territory that really fascinated me. In a way, it now seems a bit anachronistic, but for people influenced by Mao and Che Guevara, making a base in the countryside, having territory that you can call your own is absolutely key to the revolutionary process. And what interested me about that is just how different it is to the kind of revolutionary violence that we're more used to, you know, from Al-Qaeda, for example, which is all about being a kind of ghost moving through towns and cities. No one knows quite where you are. However, this is a fast-moving story, and Islamic State seem to be a kind of return to old-style revolutionary tactics. They are trying to build a revolutionary base amongst the people in that particular area of North Iraq and Syria, which they control. And of course, by doing that, they also show the vulnerability of that tactic, because once you've got a base, then it can be easily identified and it can be bombed.
But you say there's a contradiction here. Despite our human need for freedom, for escape, for creativity, that borders, in a funny sort of way, are necessary, even inspiring.
Yeah, well, one of the places I went to in the book is in the south of the Netherlands, and it's called Baal. And in this village, you have part of Belgium. So it's an enclave of Belgium. And inside that enclave of Belgium, you have other bits of the Netherlands. And in all, you have like 26 to 30 enclaves, little tiny bits of Belgium and the Netherlands all scattered amongst each other. And you can walk along the pavement in Baal, and it's helpfully signed because there are painted lines on the road. And you can walk across like five or six international borders in 30 seconds. I think that was how I did it. Not at a particularly fast pace, you know. And what I really took from Baal, not only that it's a kind of like remnant of the way borders used to be, feudal borders, before they were all straightened by, you know, the Enlightenment and Napoleon, but also the fact that people are so proud of their borders and they loved them and they took real care of them. And for the people of Baal, you know, if there aren't borders, there's nowhere to escape to. If there aren't borders, there isn't any kind of interesting difference or possibilities of democratic governance. So borders are very productive and creative at the same time as being, you know, scary.
Borders on maps, the geography of maps is going to be dramatically redrawn over coming centuries with climate change. You looked at how that's already playing out in one of the world's most vulnerable nations to rising sea levels, the Maldives. In fact, in an odd sort of way, the country is embracing climate change, but only for the rich. What's the lesson of the ocean flower, luxury villas floating on water?
Yes, I was interested in this story. It does seem to sort of turn around the tragedy of climate change in the sense that this big Dutch corporation, Dutch Docklands they're called, are building these floating luxury resorts in the Maldives. And while the rest of the population is having to suffer the predations of rising sea level, these areas, often called, you know, after flowers and petals and all sorts of fanciful titles for their floating platforms, are exclusively for the super rich who are able to go in on their boats and leave whenever they want. And they are kind of like escapees from the rising sea level. And the Maldivian government is encouraging this because they're going to get some, you know, revenue from this process. It also is fascinating because there's a whole new, you know, area of island building technologies which are changing the shape of countries and in the Gulf states as well as in the Maldives. So the idea of building islands, including building floating islands, is a real possibility. And for an increasingly crowded planet, it seems we're going to see more of this for the rich and maybe for the rest of us one day.
You end the book with the story of Stacey's Lane. This is a blind alley around the corner from your childhood home. It was your boyhood escape.
Yes, Stacey's Lane is where Paul, my brother, and I used to like build our dens. It was the place where I first learned that place could be a creative and exciting act. You can make places. And I ended the book on it because I think it's so important that we enable children to have first-hand contact with the world around them and not have their experience of den-making completely confined to The Sims and, you know, computer simulation games, because that seems to be where the dens of today's children are being made.
Alistair Bennett, in an increasingly homogenised, digitised world of screens and unreality and fantasy, this book is a plea for place. Why?
I think place has been left off the agenda for far too long, and it's enabled us to increasingly homogenise our towns and cities. A lot of us have this sort of sense of anxiety that, you know, travelling from A to B these days in almost any country is like travelling from nowhere to nowhere. And that, I think, makes us feel anxious, lost in a profound, you know, existential sense. Place, I think, is fundamental to well-being, and having an anchored and grounded sense of place makes people more capable, more resourceful, more able to tell their story in the world.
That's Professor Alistair Bonnet, author of Off the Map, speaking with our environment editor, Greg Borschmann. And that Off the Map is published by Murdoch Books. You're listening to Breakfast. It's 10 minutes to 7.